from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today, we'll visit a training that helps people identify and interact with ICE agents.
I am hoping that they get the ability to not only be able to confront and identify ICE for community defense, but also just ingrain themselves further in their community as well.
We'll tell you about a new study that examines the connection between singing and heart health. Plus, we'll get a preview of the music you can expect to hear at the Summer of Soul event series.
You come to Summer of Soul to get out of whatever you are at work, at home, wherever. You come down here and you just groove. And you don't care who's looking at you. You don't care about anything else.
All of that is coming up on Lake Effect. But first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. The Check-In is WUWM's ongoing series, keeping up with changes in Milwaukee's immigration landscape. This week, we're visiting a training that helps people know how to interact with immigration and custom enforcement officers when they come into a community. A local organization held the training last week to teach community members how to spot, verify, and document ICE activity in Milwaukee. WUWM's Jimmy Gutierrez was there and has this story.
First, thank you for everybody coming out on this hot day.
My name is Raul Rios, and I'm an organizer with Comité Sin Fronteras. And today we ran a verifier training program for our community rapid response network.
This is a verifier training. So people are coming here to kind of spot ICE and other law enforcement that may be unfamiliar to their community. What are the skills that they leave a training like this that they're able to do that kind of work?
I would say the most important skill, the one that we try to get people to leave with, is that initial confrontation of meeting the ICE agent as well. The skills that we want people to leave with is the confidence, the network itself, and being able to spot ICE. As we mentioned, a lot of the times they wear plain clothes, and they try to get in and out as quickly as possible. So that rapid response, being able to keep it within our network framework so we don't spread panic online, and also being able to accurately confront that agent and spot them, because, you know, a lot of the time they're closed off, walled off, and they won't respond to your questions.
So the role at a glance, it's a volunteer position. The requirements here are reliable car and job flexibility. The second part here is not really a requirement as much. Bilingual is a plus, but it's not a necessity. Your responsibilities would be traveling to the site of reported ICE activity to verify and debunk claims as they come in, and report to the dispatcher within 45 minutes of the initial call. Optimally is ASAP. Once on site, you want to confirm ICE presence and report back. If ICE is present, call for backup and or more eyes and voices, and documenting what ICE is doing.
I'm curious where this training came from. Is this something that you saw groups nationally doing, or is this something that community members were asking for? Is this something strategically you just wanted people to be prepared with as well?
This is something that's kind of been happening nationally as well. We mentioned the group Siembra from North Carolina. They've been very active. There's another group in Los Angeles as well, Union del Barrio. They've also been very active. It's something that we take inspiration from for this type of network because it's needed everywhere. You know, ICE is going on the ground and fielding all of these types of operations nationwide. And so it was both seen and being inspired by these other programs, but also recognizing that we needed something like that here in Milwaukee and broader Wisconsin.
You had brought up Los Angeles. And I mean, a ton of the focus from ICE, CPB, the presidential administration is really focused on LA and mobilizing our own national military in those places. And also a larger ICE presence in Chicago as well. What are we seeing here in Milwaukee as of today?
So ICE has been it's been increasingly persistent in increasing their ground operations. We've seen them merging with the FBI. They've been bringing HSI out as well, which is underneath ICE's wing as well. They have mostly been trying to pull people out of courthouses. They've also been doing this thing now where they'll say they need to do welfare checks on families. But it's definitely been an increasing presence throughout Milwaukee.
Another part of this is what folks are saying is that it's not easy to identify ICE, right? Like, they're in unmarked cars. They're not identifying themselves. They have these very violent ways of detaining people. So how does a training like this take all of that into mind for lay people, regular people to spot ICE?
We want every single person optimally in Milwaukee to be a verifier. You know, we want them to have this hotline and be able to spot these people. And we want them to take away with them that just because these people are in plain clothes, just because, you know, they're hard to identify, they're easy to identify in the sense that they are super walled off. They'll be in little conglomerate groups. They'll meet up somewhere and then they'll go to specific residences at the courthouse. And we want them to leave with that ability to be able to confront them. You know, we brought up Siembra, who've done really good work. Seriously, shout out Siembra. being able to see that, you know, they use these same cars in their same operations. That's why we want to get their license plates. That's why we want to get their identifying information as well. We want people to be able to leave with that, being able to identify them so that if they come in the neighborhood again, we can spot them every time we verify that they've been on the ground and the presence here.
And I know a lot of the training today is about verifying ICE, but you're also verifying ICE because, as I would assume, ICE is in a neighborhood to detain someone or to pick someone up. So what do we know about the rights people have that are the targets of ICE?
The rights of the people is that the people can't enter your residence, your property, without a judicial warrant, a signed judicial warrant from the magistrate. And that's really important, is because these people will try to catch you off guard. They'll try to get you in your home. You know, we've seen those videos of people knocking on doors, and like, they'll try to lure you out as well. You know, there was an incident, I believe, in Los Angeles where they had a little girl, and they waited for the mother to bring her out that way. It's the different ways that they've been trying to engage in. They've been trying to circumvent the judiciary. And the reason why we give people the information of the judiciary, because it's still a tool in our arsenal that we can use to protect our communities.
All right, so we're about to get everything started today, and I'll just kind of be a fly on the wall. But what are you hoping that participants get from going through this training?
I am hoping that they get the ability to not only be able to confront and identify ICE for community defense, but also just ingrain themselves further in their community as well. You know, a lot throughout the modern era is like very isolationist. People feel very scattered. Building community defense is hard because so many people are so isolated in their own world. But through trainings like this and through the Comité Network as a whole, we can kind of rebuild that and really be able to centralize that and be able to defend each other and spot ICE and protect our community members. And that's the most important thing I want people to leave with, besides, you know, the verifier training itself, is being able to protect each other and feeling like we are a part of each other as well.
The training took place at the Voces de la Frontera office on Milwaukee South Side. This was the fifth ICE verifier training the organization has held, and its largest. Raul said 80 people signed up for today's session. But because of the weekend's heat, a little over half that number showed up. Raul co-led the training with other members of Comité Sin Fronteras, including Yuseli Flores, who went over this little card that was sitting on everyone's chair. It broke down what to do in case you spot ICE.
It's a verifier checklist. So it's a little square. We want to encourage people to keep some in your car, keep one at home, keep one in your wallet, in your purse. And if you see suspected ICE, even if... you know, anybody can be a verifier. If you didn't get the call, but you're literally driving down the South Side and you saw ICE, you can do all these steps. So the first one is to record everything. So
the training went over what goes into becoming a verifier, what the work is, and the checklist. Then the trainers role-played a scenario of what this looks like in real life. A few people were verifiers arriving at a scene where ICE was spotted and then started engaging with officers. After the trainers demonstrated what this looked like, they broke participants off into small groups and role-played again. Here's Raul playing the role of an ICE officer.
Whenever you're ready.
All right. Hi, I am Verifier 1. Are you here to be a verifier?
Yes.
Yes, I'm Verifier as well. Just here to be a verifier. We all three are here.
Let's start recording.
All right.
It is 2:14.
Yep. We are on the scene to confirm that there is a police presence.
What are you guys recording?
We're with Community Watch.
Yeah, Community Watch for what?
Community Watch. We are just with Community Watch, and we got a call in our neighborhood about some suspicious activities. Some folks who are not from around here, just, you know, looming around. We just wanted to make sure that everything was okay.
We will remain present as an observer.
Yes.
Observer? Any of you got ID?
Are you law enforcement?
Maybe. Maybe not.
What agency are you with?
If you guys are asking me for identifying information, how come I can't see any identification? You know, see what I mean?
What are you doing?
I did identify myself. I'm with Community Watch.
What kind of Community Watch?
My name is Cortez Washington, and what brought me here is because that, you know, somebody that always wants to have, like, a stake in the community and be it feeling like a part of the community, this is something that is attacking our community as a whole, and also as a black man, too, you know. This is the type of thing that has been occurring for all communities of color for decades and generations. And so very much like Stop and Frisk 2.0, even worse because they're taking the people to off-site places, basically like black site places, and holding them until they send them to Lord knows where. And so I just felt like it was my duty as somebody in the community who wants to help out more to be able to learn how to the proper way, and also make sure that when it comes to anything that I have that I'm able to turn over to folks in order to get things done according to the legal system, then I did that accurately.
Going through the training so far, is there anything that you've picked up that you've learned that's been new to you? Does this feel kind of like instinctually like what you would do if you hadn't had this training?
I think just like the power that we have as citizens, you know, like asking for identification from them because they are part of a government governing body or government entity, being able to say, no, I don't need to, I'm not comfortable giving you any identification or anything of that nature. And a lot of other things as far as like being able to like actually speak to the people that are behind in these homes or in these places that are being targeted, being like, hey, you don't have to come out. They have to have a warrant. They have to have this. You don't have to say anything, you know, and still completely ignore what they're doing and just be there to be the support and be the person that's helping out those folks rather than being afraid of them, because that's how they operate, is off fear. Off fear and off the notion that they can just come in anywhere and do anything they want. And that's not the case, you know. So
you want to get involved with that work. Everyone's had opportunity. That is a wrap. The last thing I want to say here is, seriously, thank you all for coming out, especially on this hot day, for doing this. This is important. Each one of you is a valuable community member. Give yourselves a round of applause for coming out today.
Raul Rios is an organizer with Comité Sin Fronteras. He facilitated the ICE Verifier training and spoke with WUWM's Jimmy Gutierrez. This reporting is part of WUWM's focused, in-depth coverage on three issues our community told us they care about: climate change, immigration, and the economy. You can find more coverage on immigration at WUWM.com. And did you know you can listen to Lake Effect as a podcast? Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to download and listen on demand. In about 15 minutes, we'll tell you about new research on whether singing could help improve your cardiovascular health. But first, we'll hear some music that'll be featured at the Summer of Soul event series, which kicks off today. That's coming up on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. If you like R&B, funk, Latin jazz, soul, or hip-hop, then there's a concert series for you this summer in Milwaukee. It's called Summer of Soul, and it's happening every other Wednesday starting today at the Marcus Performing Arts Center's Peck Pavilion. Here's a little preview to get a sense of the series.
Under the sun-soaked skies of Milwaukee, a place where the soul of music, food, and culture come alive, Summer of Soul is brewing. This is more than just an event. It's a revival of spirit, a journey through the sounds that shape generations, where every bite tells the story and every note sparks a connection to the soul of the city.
WUWM's Maian Silver sat down with Gerard Blanks, co-owner and managing director at Culture by Design. It's the firm that's organizing the block party-like event. Together, they share some of the music you'll be able to hear.
Okay, so I wanted to do a listening session with you, and we're going to jump right into that. Many of the artists who will be gracing the stage, some of these great timeless artists. Wednesday, July 2nd, you've got Bilal headlining, as well as the Sean Hinton experience, and Don Black is the DJ for the evening. Bilal is a Grammy-winning vocalist. He won a Grammy for a collab with Kendrick Lamar, which we'll play a little bit of a little bit later. But I wanted to start with this fabulous track called Soul Sister. We'll listen to a little bit of that.
It's all in the eyes, you and me. Words just disguise all the things that you be.
What made you wanna start the series with Bilal?
That song right there. No, I've been a fan of Bilal for years, and he's had an interesting career. He was in some ways seen as a child prodigy. He was he was signed, I believe, maybe before he was 20 or in his early 20s. People were talking about this guy when he was in like high school, college, right? It was this young black kid with this amazing voice, operatic range, right? And so one of the first people we started working with was Erykah Badu. And so when he came on the scene, it was a big deal. Imagine like a high school athlete, right? Like heavily recruited, right? And so I thought his first album was phenomenal. And then there was a point at which he maybe faded from the scene for a bit, but then had a resurgence. But he's everybody's favorite singer. Like you said, he has a great song with Kendrick Lamar. He has a song with Common, Talib, The Roots, everybody, right? Erykah Badu. And so to me, he was the epitome. Like, when you think of Summer of Soul, like, Bilal. Like, I mean, you know, when
he's
you think
the
of
definition.
Word of association, right? And so I always start from a place of exploration, right? I am looking at anything and everybody. I'm looking at artists that I know I can't afford. Because what will happen is as you sort of eliminate certain artists, other artists come into focus. And I honestly didn't know if we could get Bilal. So I was extremely happy. I'll send out an email and just say, you know, just on the chance. And we were able to lock him in. And I want to say he was maybe one of the first artists I booked.
Sometimes I wish I wasn't me. Sometimes.
Because then what happens is that gives you your foundation, right, for kind of what the rest of the series looks like. So Bilal for me was the epitome of what I want Summer of Soul to be. And he's a bit of a, dare I say, eccentric performer. So that's another part of it too, is it's not just good music, but it is, if you've ever been to the Peck, it is up close and personal. And that's one of the things I like about it. At times last year, it felt a little too intimate, like, because people are right on the stage dancing. I mean, the performer's maybe 10 feet away from you. So I just thought, man, this could be a fun opening night.
Just can't rest. I'm waiting for the phone to ring.
But he's one of those guys because of his range, because of what he can do, you can fit him, you can put him on a rock album, right? You could put him on a gospel album very easily. R&B, soul, hip-hop, everything. I wouldn't be surprised if he did country at some point. He is just an amazing singer. And I want to say one of the really important things about Summer Soul is the balance between artists you know and artists you don't. So there are a lot of people, when we announced Bilal, that were like, oh my God, Bilal's coming. And a lot of people were like, who? And then as we started promo, Soul Sister was one of the songs we put out first on Instagram. And I had a lot of people hit me up like, I don't know who this guy is, but I love it. I'll be there.
You must be my soul.
That's awesome. This is Lake Effect. I'm WWM's Mayan Silver. I'm speaking with Gerard Blanks of Culture by Design. And we were talking about some of the other people that are playing on July 2nd. You've got the Sean Hinton Experience, who's a 414 artist. And he toured with Mary J. Blige as her music director. He also worked with John Legend and Jill Scott. I want to play two tracks from him because he's so good too.
Yeah.
Dude, okay, here's I'm Gucci.
It's an easy kind of day. The sun is shining. And I'm chilling with my loved ones. It's the perfect kind of day. And from ear to ear I'm smiling. While the children have fun. I'm glad I ain't got nothing planned to do. And I ain't got nowhere to be.
Okay, so that's a song that you can't be in a bad mood to, right?
If you're all right, you can go anywhere you like.
Yeah, and so what's interesting about I'm Gucci is, one, it doesn't it just take you to a place? Summertime, picnic, barbecue. It's just one of those songs that it's, like you said, it's impossible not to just feel a groove. And the beautiful thing is, the groove you feel inside is the groove you feel inside. And that's one of the things that I love about Summer of Soul is we want people to come there and be themselves, right? So when you get down there, because I know you're going to be like all five of us.
Every Wednesday.
You will see people that are really good dancers to people that just like, you know, we call them the wigglers. They just wiggle to the music. That is one of those songs. And what's interesting about I'm Gucci is it's a viral, I don't know if you know this, but it became a viral hit.
Well, I'm all right, if you're all right, you can go anywhere you like.
Oh, you can go online and you on YouTube. There are people from like Nashville to Dallas to LA that are doing line dancing to I'm Gucci. It was a song that was used quite a bit. There are a lot of viral clips. It was essentially an underground smash for Sean.
Amazing. Okay, there's another one from him, Love for a Gangsta. Like, it is very good. Okay, so here we go.
Fell from heaven.
What a line.
So he is the producer. He is the lead musician on a lot of his music because he plays four or five instruments: drums, keys, guitar, bass. He's the songwriter. He is the band. He's Prince. Oh my God. That groove again. Like, this is when I can nerd out a bit. My wife always gives me that look when I'm talking too much. But like, when you really get into it, that groove just makes, like, the two of us are just naturally bobbing our heads. There's no way not to, right?
Tell me.
And that's the energy that I want to create. Where you come to Summer of Soul to be you. Get out of whatever you are at work, at home, wherever. You come down here and you just groove. And you don't care who's looking at you. You don't care about anything else. You just, yes. And so that's the type of music, right? So when we're selecting the artist and we're selecting the music, it's with intention.
Totally. Everything that you just said, I love that. Because, you know, whether you're worried about, like, you know, if you bring someone new or people are meeting each other for the first time or whatever it is, none of that matters. This is just like the groove. You just go into that space. It's a zone of good vibes and like you leave everything at the door, you know?
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Isn't that the best?
And this is where I want to be. Living inside your love and arms, baby.
Yeah,
the best experiences.
It's the best. That's wonderful.
I do want to say though,
yeah,
the Sean thing I think is really important.
Yes.
One, because he is. You mentioned that he toured with Mary J. Blige. He didn't just tour; like, he was our musical director. And we have this clip right now on Instagram of him with Jill Scott, and he's Jill Scott's favorite guitar player. And he's in Vegas right now with Bruno Mars. So he is one of like a handful of guys globally that get the call, right? Hey, I need a musician, I need a guitar player, he'll fly out to South Africa, right? So I just want to make sure Sean gets, you know.
Like Angie Swan, too, or the
Angie Stone,
Sister Strings.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Angie Swan from Milwaukee, or Sister Strings are like just get instrumentalists that go so far.
And it's interesting with them, like the amount of respect that they get nationally, right? It's, yeah.
It brings Milwaukee, it gives Milwaukee some good light, too, you know?
Yeah. And it's amazing because sometimes, you know how it is, you don't fully appreciate somebody until they go somewhere else and become a star. But it is so important to embrace them and make sure that we are just speaking with affirmation about those.
That's
things.
Great. Okay, so that's July 2nd. It's going to be just a super groove the whole time.
I want to know, baby.
So we've got all this music, culture series, every night is a vibe. How are you planning to pack up your schedule so that you can attend every single one of these? What's your advice to people?
I wish we could send a calendar invite to everybody. But seriously, mark it down on your calendar. Like, go in your phone right now, Wednesday, July 2nd, 16th, 30th, August 13th and 27th. Don't book anything else. Just reserve it. Block off 5 hours. You, your besties, get them together and come have a great time.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Gerard, for talking to us about this amazing concert series.
Thank you.
That was Gerard Blanks, co-owner and managing director at Culture by Design, speaking with WUWM's Matignon Silver. The first Summer of Soul event is tonight at the Marcus Performing Arts Center's Peck Pavilion. You can find more information about that and future events at WUWM.com. Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death in the United States, according to the CDC. Almost 50% of adults in the U.S. are suffering from some form of it. With such staggering statistics, finding new strategies to prevent and manage heart disease is vital. One local doctor is contributing to this research by looking into the effects of singing. Singing as a kind of therapy to improve heart health hasn't been widely studied. But Jacqueline Kalinske at the Medical College of Wisconsin has been investigating this connection since 2017. Her new study, funded by the National Institutes of Health, was released in May. That's when she spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski.
So we know personally that if we enjoy singing, no matter our skill level, that usually we feel good after. But what caught your interest as a cardiologist about studying singing and how it impacts our physical health?
Well, you know, when I observe people singing, and this is usually professional singers, you can often get a sense for how hard they're working from an exertional standpoint, right? Even after a 5-minute performance on stage, singers look out of breath. And that got me thinking a little bit about, you know, singing as a form of exercise. You know, do we know if singing is a form of exercise? More specifically, do we know what impact singing has on heart health? One thing I study in my lab in a variety of different studies is vascular function. So it's the function of our blood vessels. More specifically, there is this really important single layer lining of cells on the inside of blood vessels called endothelial cells, and they're incredibly important for heart health. And the neat thing about those endothelial cells is that we can measure the function of them non-invasively. And of course, you know, trying to make the corollary to exercise, we know that a short bout of exercise improves the endothelial cell function, you know, even 10 or 15 minutes of exercise. And so I wanted to test that hypothesis using singing as an intervention and then measuring endothelial cell function before and after singing.
You mentioned this improves our endothelial function, exercise of some level, and correlating that with singing. And with singing as a form of exercise, can you explain kind of why you were interested in looking at this and what you feel are some of the shortcomings of traditional rehabilitation programs for people with cardiovascular issues that you're trying to address with this study?
Absolutely. So the vascular function is a huge predictor of cardiovascular health, including future events. So we can kind of estimate one's risk of having a cardiovascular event by measuring their vascular function. In addition to that, we know that patients with coronary artery disease, the most common form of heart disease, all of those patients typically have some level of endothelial cell dysfunction, because that's where the plaque builds up, is between that layer of cells and the center, the media layer of cells. In the highest risk population, are older patients who have already had an event. So have already had a stent or a bypass surgery or a heart attack. And the traditional methods of lowering their risk, including traditional cardiac rehabilitation programs, include a component of physical exercise, right? It's where they get on a treadmill and they walk, sometimes go a little faster, and they're supervised by an exercise physiologist. The problem is several fold. And number one, older adults are less likely to participate in cardiac rehabilitation programs, even when their doctors refer them. And that's for a variety of reasons, but a lot of it has to do with they have other comorbidities or physical limitations, you know, arthritis, neuropathy, that make them worried that they won't be able to do the exercise component. So along those lines, this was the population that I think, you know, could serve to benefit the most from a different intervention, such as singing, you know, that can be considered an exercise, and they can do it while they're seated. And so at least it's something compared to nothing, right? I'd rather have them do something than nothing, especially if there's benefit, if we can prove that there is benefit in terms of cardiovascular risk and lowering their chance of having another event.
So you explained earlier that, you know, professional singers, you can tell it's exercise when they're up there performing. So can you explain the mechanisms of singing in relation to cardiovascular health and who you collaborated with to better understand this?
Yes. So singing, you know, involves a lot of diaphragm activation, right? And, you know, then there is some controversy about the type of muscle that a diaphragm is, but, you know, it is smooth muscle, but it kind of behaves as a skeletal muscle because we do have some control over it. That's kind of the deciding factor. So that is the one muscle that gets activated with singing. And of course, you know, when you take deep breaths and expand the lungs, you're not only working the lungs, but you're activating the vagus nerve. So it's one of the longest nerves in the body. You know, it goes all the way from the midbrain down to the gut. And when you hear about brain, heart, gut axis, they're talking about the vagus nerve. So it's a very specific nerve, and it actually innervates our vocal cords, our larynx, parts of the throat, and then it connects to the diaphragm too. So when we do take deep breaths, you know, our heart rate can actually change, and that's due to vagal nerve stimulation. And so there, you can see that there are different mechanisms of the likely benefits of singing and exercise as well on cardiovascular health. And then, of course, the thing that I study too is the vasculature, the endothelial cells. We didn't know, I would say before I got into this research, we didn't know what singing does to the endothelial cells or the function of them. And so this is like a very innovative research question, and it's got a lot of attention, you know, for good reason. But sure enough, we found that in our very first study that just 14 minutes of singing led to improvements in the vascular endothelial function. So lots of different mechanisms. Now, to your point, Audrey, I'm not a musical expert and I don't claim to be. And so I've worked with numerous musical experts during this research. So two voice professors from UW-Milwaukee and UW-Madison, and then a team of music therapists, one in particular that's been with me for several years doing this research. And so they provide their expertise, and they designed and made the interventions, you know, that we ended up using in the clinical trials. I can't do this research without that expertise. So it has been fun and rewarding to work with such a diverse group of experts.
So with their input that influence what the study became. So can you explain to me what your participants went through?
Yes. So, you know, I'll talk about the big trial that we just wrapped up. It was a 5-year trial funded by the National Institutes of Health. We wanted to include, number one, a control. And then we had two different singing interventions. So we had the singing intervention that we used several years ago that was successful, which was a instructional sing-along video. And so the professor of voice recorded the video. They were in the, you know, background. So it was Wendy Rowe. She was in the background on her piano. And then she would have a patient kind of closer to the camera in the video as well. And they would sing together. She would instruct him and she would be playing the piano. And so it was consisted of 10 minutes of vocal warm-up and then 10 minutes going through one song at various rhythms and tempos, and then 10 minutes of another song. And the subjects could pick the songs based on their preferences. So that was all pre-recorded, and they would just watch it, you know, independently and sing to it, you know, as they saw fit. And then the second intervention we did in person because, you know, my thought was, well, you know, like cardiac rehabilitation programs, you know, the patient is exercising with an exercise physiologist there to help them and like coach them and guide them. And so the thought was we should have somebody in person doing that for the subjects too, and maybe it'll be even more beneficial. And so that was an in-person session with a board-certified music therapist. Now, because it's a clinical trial, we have to do our best to keep things similar. So the format was, again, similar. So 30 minutes total, 10 minutes warm-up, and then two songs of their choosing to make up the full 30 minutes. And then we had a control visit. The control visit ended up being a hearing test. So it was 30 minutes of really not doing a whole lot other than getting a hearing test done. And we performed the same measurements before and after each 30-minute session. And they had to have at least 2 days between each visit. So it was a crossover trial, which means that every subject gets all 3 visits. We ended up enrolling 65 subjects. They were all older patients with known coronary artery disease, as I said, so a high-risk population that honestly serves to benefit maybe the most from this type of intervention. But what we found is that, yes, even compared to the control arm, the singing for 30 minutes led to improvements in vascular endothelial function. There was one finding that somewhat surprised me. So it was the video intervention is the one that worked, or the one that showed the improvement. So similar to our pilot study that we did before, the visit with the coach turned out non-significant. And I don't think it's because it didn't work or it wasn't beneficial. I think it had to do with, unfortunately, some interruptions during the COVID pandemic. The other thought, after speaking to other experts in this area of research, is that, you know, perhaps there was some anxiety. If you're not like a seasoned singer like myself, like maybe it makes you a little nervous to do that. And so if nerves were playing a role, that could certainly impact endothelial function too, like anxiety or stress. But either way, you know, we just got the paper published and we're getting the results out there and already, you know, hearing from other experts in the field, organizing conferences that we can hear about each other's research. So it's just a really exciting area right now.
So given that, I mean, research is a long game, as you well know, and mm-hmm. there's more stages to this and more work to do. So what are some of your long-term goals for this study with these preliminary results that you're seeing?
Yes. Thanks, Audrey. It's a great question. So eventually, I would like to see this incorporated into cardiac rehabilitation programs. That is my ultimate goal. But what that's going to look like remains to be determined. So kind of the next step, the next grant that I'm working on and hoping to get funded is looking at group singing. And the reason for group singing is because now you're getting together, you know, members of the similar population, so the aging population with heart disease, and there is a degree of loneliness in some of these older populations. And, you know, if we can get them all together, not only could they get the potential cardiovascular benefits, but they could get all these other social well-being, psychological benefits, and just having that social connectedness. And not only that, but, you know, when you think about long-term, how to implement this in real-life settings or real-world settings, we always have to think about payers and insurance and, like, are they going to cover this? You know, is this something they would cover? And I would say they're probably more likely to cover something like this if the costs are lower, right? So we are going to be testing group singing interventions and in a similar population. That's the next step.
Excellent. Well, it's really exciting and interesting work. And Dr. Klinsky, I want to thank you so much for joining me to explain more about it.
Of course. Thank you for having me, Audrey.
Dr. Jacqueline Klinsky is a general cardiologist and an associate professor of medicine and cardiology at the Medical College of Wisconsin. She spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in May. We've got a new season of Bubbler Talk going, and we need some new questions. Submit your questions about the Milwaukee area at WUWM.com. Still to come, we'll learn about some of the best state parks to bring your dog right here in Wisconsin. That's next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. The weather has been beautiful, and many of us have been enjoying the great outdoors. And what better way to enjoy nature than with your dog? But not every trail or park is right for your pup, as author Danielle St. Louis explains in her book, A Dog Lover's Guide to Hiking Wisconsin's State Parks. St. Louis joins me to share what makes a park good for your dog and some of the best locations in the Milwaukee area. A lot of us like to go hiking during the summer, and many of us like to bring our dogs. When you're looking at a hiking trail, what makes something good for a dog? What is the criteria that you use?
Some of the criteria that I use when I'm looking at trails and whether they're appropriate for bringing dogs are things like the width of the trail. So it's always a nice thing to have space when you're passing other hikers, especially other hikers who also have dogs, to have room on the trail to step aside and let those people pass by you with ample space. And so if the trail is too narrow, or if there are potential hazards, if you need to like step off the trail to let other people pass, those are types of things that I like to look for and the types of things that I comment on in the guidebook. I also look at the trail materials. So what is the makeup of the things you're walking on? So is it mostly stone or sand or dirt? Because some dogs have issues with walking on different types of materials. And it's also helpful for planning your own footwear too as a human.
Sure. Now, when we're looking at specifically trails around Wisconsin, I know I've gone outside with my dog and thought, I wonder if you should be sniffing that plant that much. I wonder if you should be looking like, what are you doing there? Is that safe? Are there things that we need to be aware of that tend to be on trails throughout Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely poison ivy in many of our parks and poison oak, and those are plants that you should watch out for and can be more upsetting to you than your dog. But you do need to watch out if your dog gets poison ivy oils on their fur, and then if you pet your dog, then it transfers to your skin. So those plants would be more upsetting topically to you than your dog, but eating certain plants can be disruptive to your dog's, you know, GI tract and can lead to intestinal upset. So eating plants along the trail is usually something you'd like to avoid. Black walnuts are especially toxic to dogs. And so I do make note in the book about trails that have more black walnut tree populations by them. And then also, you know, any types of animal, whether it's animal droppings or like owl pellets, those types of things also can be problematic for your dog. They can contain bacteria and things that aren't going to be good for your dog and also cause GI upset. So those are the types of things that you'd want to look out for and try and ensure that your dog doesn't eat while you're walking along the trails.
I think anyone who's familiar with a black walnut tree will know about those big green pods that it lets off. And I could imagine a dog looking at it and thinking, oh, this is a tennis ball. This is something to play with.
Yeah, right. And so ideally, you want to avoid using those black walnuts as tennis balls.
So looking at these hiking trails themselves, when we're looking around the Milwaukee area, what are some of the best trails to bring your dog?
So I specifically paid attention to state parks. So there may be additional state recreation areas in the Milwaukee area, but the three state parks that are closest to the Milwaukee area are Lakeshore State Park, which is actually downtown right by the Summerfest grounds, Kohler Andre State Park, and then Harrington Beach State Park. And so those Harrington Beach and Kohler Andre State Parks are north of Milwaukee along the shoreline there with beautiful dunes and dog beaches. So those are excellent options if you want to head to the beach on a nice summer day and take your dog with you. Lakeshore State Park in Milwaukee is a nice option for just a quick day hike, just to see the lake and the downtown skyline with your dog. It's also a park that doesn't require a park pass or permit, so you can visit for free any day of the year.
Very nice. Now, as we're looking throughout kind of the Milwaukee area and what we might consider day trips from Milwaukee, what are some of your favorite hiking trails?
For a day trip from Milwaukee, you can do Kohler Andre and Harrington Beach both as day trips. And of those two parks, Kohler Andre has more restrictive dog areas. So there's portions of the park where you're not allowed to take your dog. Harrington Beach has fewer dog restrictions, but they both have really nice trails. So Kohler Andre has got a nice area that's specifically meant for dogs and dog hiking, and it's through some really beautiful pine stands. So that's a favorite. And then Harrington Beach around the Quarry Lake is a beautiful little short mile hike that just takes you around the quarry that's filled in with water. It's a very crystal blue kind of little lake and a nice experience for walking with your dog. So those are both two options in the day trip from Milwaukee category that are really pleasant options.
Now, you mentioned restrictions. Some of these parks do have restrictions, and there are a variety of reasons why you might. What are some of the reasons that we should really adhere to the restrictions that are in place in especially state parks that might be areas for other animals?
So the restrictions regarding dogs in our state parks are generally the main rule of thumb, or the general restriction, is that your dog needs to be on a leash at all times when you're in a state park. And that is a rule for many reasons. It's a great way to keep your dog from disturbing any animals that are in the area. I know there are a lot of populations of animals that we're trying to, you know, be good stewards of those in their environments. And so keeping our dogs away from those animals and from disturbing them. So keeping them on leash so that they don't disturb them. And also so they're not causing additional erosion in areas that we're also trying to reestablish or maintain. So for example, the dunes environments at Kohler Andre State Park, it's a very sensitive environment. And so there are restrictions about taking your dog on certain parts of the boardwalk because of the potential impact of your dog being on the dune. So keeping your dog on leash is a primary restriction, but for great reasons in terms of being good stewards of and respecting the environment around us, and also respecting our fellow park visitors. As dog lovers, we tend to assume all people love dogs, but that actually isn't the case. And so it's just the best way to be respectful visitors is to keep your dog on leash and not in other people's space so that they can also enjoy the park in their own way.
For sure. Now, looking at all of Wisconsin, there are going to be a lot of people who are traveling to different parts of the state, whether they're going home or whether they're on vacation. Where are some good places to hike throughout the state? Some of your favorites.
Sure. There are so many beautiful places in Wisconsin, which is something I discovered through researching and writing the book. Some of my favorites. So in the Door County area, there are parks that are super popular. So Peninsula State Park is a very popular park and it is beautiful, but I like to visit parks that are a little less crowded. And so my recommendation for the Door County area is Pottawatomie State Park, which has a lot of the same features as Peninsula, or Newport State Park, which is also beautiful along the great beaches for your dogs as well at Newport. In the Madison area, Devil's Lake, again, is a really popular park. It's beautiful, but it's so popular that I tend to go to Mirror Lake State Park instead, which is just a little bit further away and is also very beautiful. Again, some of the same features as Devil's Lake, but just typically fewer people. So Mirror Lake is beautiful. Also on the western side of the state, southwestern Wyalusing State Park and Nelson Dewey are some of my favorites. Very beautiful. In northwestern, there's Interstate State Park, which is great. And even further up is Willow River, which is beautiful right outside of Hudson, some amazing waterfalls. So there's a lot of amazing natural features in our state that are the jewels of our state parks.
Danielle St. Louis is the author of A Dog Lover's Guide to Hiking Wisconsin State Parks. We spoke in 2022. And that wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm Joy Powers. If you missed any of Lake Effect this week, you can find all of our conversations at WUWM.com. If you'd like to take the show on the go, you can download the Lake Effect podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll speak with the authors of Choosing Love, a book that explores how people can identify as both conservative Christians and LGBTQ+. And we'll learn about the history of Milwaukee's Silver City and National Parks neighborhoods. Thanks so much for joining us right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.